Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for over 43 years now. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and we educate each other, and we are educated by each other, and hopefully we're entertained by each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will return and give you the usual links. If you want to reach me by email, that would be for what we used to call mailbag questions. Or if you have expertise in a technical field that's in the news and you want to share it with us, or you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for them. They're as rare as hen teeth. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder, have him take a look at some space and NASA-related story and comment on it, of course, you can directly contact him. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, as usual, I cut and paste a bunch of interesting articles and YouTubes and such that I find through the week, and I put it up on a link page, and you can get to it at any time that you want. Just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the link page, and we keep that link available for a long, long, long time. Also, there's a chat room available. It's been kind of quiet lately, but every so often it kind of erupts with a lot of activity. You can reach that by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. We offer an audio stream of the Technical Net on the Internet. Usually I just kind of turned it off at the end of the Technical Net, but a few people asked me to keep it live. So for the rest of the week, if you're curious what's going on in Glen Oaks or Peter, but you don't have a radio handy, you just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you the audio stream. And I always like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it's been visited by more than a million visitors, and it holds the archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who've moved away from the area and others that unfortunately became silent keys and passed away. A lot of wisdom in those files. So let me drop for a second and I will return and tell you our plans for tonight. Surprisingly, nothing really special is going on in artificial intelligence. I mean, they're still cranking out public release notices, and they're adding little features, and they're adding all kinds of things, but you know, nothing that really is that revolutionary for at least this week. And the stock market seems to have adjusted for DeepSeek, and they're just going to keep pumping up that balloon, that big balloon, the AI stock market is, and we'll see who wins and who loses. It's sort of going to be a game of musical chairs. There's going to be winners, but there's also going to be losers. So we'll see how that works out. We'll go directly to questions, comments, topics for discussion. Hopefully, the first few will be amateur radio related. I say this every week and almost every time. People, you know, bring up other things, which is, I guess, fine. If you don't want to talk about antennas, you don't want to talk about radios, I don't know what to tell you, but we're open to anything. I would prefer the first few to be amateur radio related, but throughout the night, as everyone is obviously aware at this point, I'm open to discussing any kind of science and technology. I will try my best to give you some information on the subject, or at the very least, to offer some references on the subject, and we'll see how things go. That should take us to approximately 10:15. Paul will join us, WS2N, with the SpaceNet report. That will take us to 11 p.m. approximately, and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's my plans if everything works out here in the shack and I don't get dropped out of All-Star on the repeater and the repeater behaves and everything works the way it's supposed to. A lot of times it didn't. A lot more times it did, partially due to the great technical team that maintained the repeater. So that's our plans. Let's see how it goes. We're open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, please hit the push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or non-amateur related, and we'll put you on a list. Wes, you're very low volume.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Wes is on the list. Anyone like to join him? I'll ask again. I remind people regularly. It's kind of pointless because what's going on, I think, is people just kind of don't get to the radio anywhere near 8 o'clock. So they'll come by at 8:15, 8:20, 8:30, 8:45, 9 o'clock, and obviously they can't put their name on the list if they're not listening to the radio. So, you know, with me every week reminding people of this, I'm reminding it to people who come on time, the people who come later. You know, I scold them a little bit when they arrive, but I can't find a solution for this. I have to kind of go forward in time and remind everyone to go back in time and pick up the radio at 8 o'clock. Anyway, anyone else who wants to put their name on the list right now, I mean, there'll be opportunities later on, obviously, but it would be nice to know that there are other people there.
Comment WS2N.
Yankee Golf Sam is listening.
Okay, thank you, Sam. Paul, what do you want to say?
I think what happens too is the other nets, most of the other nets start at 8:30, so people get as well. You know, some of them, like what we got, computer net and nostalgia net, things like that, have always started. Yeah, even some of the ones that we don't have anymore, they all started at 8:30. Anyway, back to you.
Okay, I mean, maybe that's it. I don't think so, though, because for the most part, the guys that kind of come on, well, you know, later in the tech net, a lot of them, I'm not familiar if they've kind of been with the club for that many years. I just think people tend to kind of be forgetful or delayed. Even in my Kings County technical net that I run, there's usually more activity that goes on about 20, 30, 40 minutes into the hour. And, that particular net, on that repeater, everything starts at 9 p.m., and so do I. So it could be a factor. I don't know. I think, though, if we change the hour to 8:30, people would just show up another half hour late, you know, into the 9 o'clock hour. So I don't know. I don't think you can really win with this type of a problem. People just, they don't quite, they certainly don't circle calendars, unfortunately. Okay, well, it looks like, we're not going to get any sign-ins here, at least in the next 5-10 minutes. Again, usually people kind of wander in about 8:20, 8:30, 8:40, 8:50. We'll see how things work out. Wesley, I guess you're the list.
Thank you very much. And to Adrian. The other subject to discuss is Protect Your Radio with Orlando Ham Preemption 2025. It's a title, but actually it's Protecting Your Radio with Armolog.com. If you don't mind to say a few words about it, Dr. Roy, I would appreciate it.
I don't remember that email even. I think you're probably better to explain it yourself, because I remember you kind of sent me something about some items that were announced at Orlando Hamcation, but I don't remember any particular. I don't know what you're alluding to. Insurance, is it?
Okay, interesting. So, when you buy your radio, doesn't matter what you pay, $200, $1,000, or $7,000, or $8,000. There's a company called Armolog, A-R-M-O-L-O-G, and they are available at armolog.com. They provide something interesting for ham radio operators, which is like a metal casing. It's not a casing, it's sort of bracket. It's an enclosure, empty, completely, having two legs, flat enough, so you can mount that enclosure to your car or to your desk or underneath of your desk, and you can put your radio inside. Now, each one of the brackets of housing, or we could call it housing, is made for particular radio, and you can simply screw that radio into that bracket, and is long enough to cover all of the connectors, so you cannot accidentally break it when you're nearby by accident. Let me drop. Okay. So it is also good to mount under the desk, as I said, so it doesn't take a place, or it allows you conveniently to mount your investment and protect it, especially with connectors easy to damage. I was looking at the prices of those housing. So they're usually made from 2C brackets, like one on the left-hand side of the radio, one on the right-hand side of the radio. They probably got that idea from a camera and a photo equipment where those brackets, those housings, are widely available. They are made specially for Yesu, Icon, Kenwood, Zigo, Eniton, Watson, Beach, Midland, Alinco, Motorola. And they also have optional packages and components for it if you need. They also have a battery system in the special enclosure, or those brackets are made to fit the batteries inside if they are not inside of the radio. They also have some enclosures that are called blemished. That means during the manufacturing process, they do not make all of them sparkling, I would say this word. So if you have a minor problems with it, instead of the company losing the money on it, they can sell it to you for the fraction of original cost. And I was looking at the prices of it. In their page, Armolog, armovog.com, Loku, armolok.com. They usually show the price $195, $170, sometimes $135, depends from the radio. They also have a backpack, specially made backpacks for that given radio that you can put your radio inside and have easy access to all of the knobs and all of the components of it. But I was quite surprised when I saw the price $750 for higher grade radios. So even though that, let's say, for yesterday, give you almost every possible radio, which is usually the small radios or QRP radios. When it comes to the big radios, or if we're talking about Kenwood and ICOM, you may expect that the price is quite high. So imagine that you spent $900 for the radio and then $700 for the housing for it. But yes, it looks nice, and it is, especially for the people who want to have the radio perfectly mounted in their cars or underneath of the chair, sitting place, or any other place. So I hope that you recall the story right now what I'm talking about. There is on eham.net. There is a comment, only one comment, about that Armalok TPA817B, and the guys absolutely are thrilled with it. He loves it, and whatsoever, 5 stars. He says it is amazing protection for his radio. Well, if you have a back, then you may consider to spend it for it. Back to you, Dr. Roy, for any comments, or maybe somebody has a comment.
Hey, C2GS. Yeah, I flipped through the web site to kind of get a feel. It's basically, there are camera boxes. There are mounting frames for cameras that some people kind of mount all kinds of paraphernalia, lights, and other such on it. So it's sort of a camera box for radios. It has a certain aesthetic. Not one that I particularly like. It seems to kind of take up a significant amount of space. I mean, it might be protective, but you're going to need a bigger, something bigger to carry it than if you just pad it around the edges and take it from one place to another. So depends on the individual. If your aesthetics is black iron and putting your radio in a jail cell, you certainly get that aesthetic.
That's exactly the idea they got it from. That was I believe Chinese. They came with the idea to protect very expensive camera equipment for the people who are professional or amateurs in this. And then when they spend a few $1,000, they want to have it not only protected but also having additional mounting holes threaded, so you could mount anything in addition to it. So it was a good idea. Now it looks like we have something for ham radio amateurs. I assume that for much more expensive radios at the price of $1,000 to $6,000, somebody might consider to spend even $750 for the proper enclosure. Don't you think, Antoine?
Well, again, this is not financial advice, but I certainly wouldn't invest in the company. We amateur radio operators tend to be a wee bit tight with our money. And the idea of spending $7,000 for an oversized cage for an expensive base station that 95% of us keep in their base station, so they don't really need to take it anywhere. They don't really need to protect it from anything. So, you know, that would be kind of a big ticket item for it's another case of a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. The primary reason why camera cages work so well, and also I think they're better designed. They take up a lot less volume. They kind of hug the surface of the cameras, but they provide, as you mentioned, mounting areas, because a lot of times mounting extra equipment onto the side of a camera and putting maybe a handle on it and all kinds of fun things becomes very useful. There's not much that I would want to mount onto a base station radio, you know, not even perhaps a microphone. So, again, it's a solution in search of a problem, I feel. I wish them luck, and I'm sure they'll make a couple of bucks, but I don't think they're going to make a lot of money. I haven't kind of come across any manufacturer in the amateur radio sphere that has become filthy rich off of amateur radio merchandise. Usually they either go into the commercial branch of communications, or they get a lot of government subsidies and you know, contracts with NSA and other such agencies. So I wish them luck.
You actually made a good point. You made a good point. It's like you were trying to say that when you mount that to that cage, your radio to that cage, it looks ugly. Even though that the cage is very nicely made, it looks ugly. But at the same time, for the people who do not have a place on the desk, but they have plenty of stuff on the desk, plenty of monitors, and then I want to mount the radio under the desk so I could screw to the bottom of the desk, that cage, and then put the radio inside. Although with those two front handles they have, which were meant to carry on that radio for two guys sleeping. That is not easy to even reach all of the knobs and to exit.
Yeah, I don't think that that's a good solution. I think it would make the radio use inconvenient. It would make the desk use inconvenient. I have some radios on my desk. But they're really mostly the front end of the radio. The body is over on my left-hand side. I have an old television caddy from the days of cathode ray tube, and I have all my the major boxes are stacked up there. And they make a much tighter, smaller volume without cages around them. So, again, I don't know. There's a lot of people trying desperately to make a living trying to solve non-existent problems. Unfortunately, I think this is another example. As you pointed out at the beginning of this, I think a couple of guys who wanted to start a business saw some of the Chinese manufacturers of these cages for cameras and said, gee, we can do that. Why not? You know, but it goes back to the old line, just because you can do a thing doesn't necessarily mean you should do a thing.
Interesting. Another one. So, most of us, I assume, have VNA or nano-VNA, but then it is good to have a spectrum analyzer. And the one that is available widely, usually for $260, $270, the Stein ESA Ultra Spectrum Analyzer. And this 4-inch, you can use it the same way as VNA, but it measures the spectrum. But now on the market, we see PORTX-VNSA, PORTX-VNA. And the PORTX-VNA is made by the same guy. That means it's not made. It is designed by Eric Kashowek. So both of them are manufactured in China, but the designer is that person. And it looks like Portex VNSA has newer software. Let me drop. Now, one significant difference is, although both are touch pads, the Portex VNSA has a knob, and by turning the knob, you could choose whatever the options or whatever the menu options you need. In addition to that, it costs less than Stein ESA. So the model number for that spectrum analyzer is SA5-PORTX-VNSA spectrum analyzer. For some information, it does have a RF generator and spectral analyzer, and you can do spectral monitoring and all of the things that normally you could do a very sophisticated spectrum analyzer. Back to you, Dr. Roy, for the comment.
AC2GS. Well, yeah, I mean, it's a nice, inexpensive Chinese spectrum analyzer. If you already have the Tiny SA, should you buy another one just for the knob? I don't think so. If you haven't bought it, and, you know, you've heard people talk about it, this certainly seems to have a few more bells and whistles to kind of maybe motivate people. It's a nice instrument. It's small. It's a little on the fragile side. As long as you kind of buy it from a place where you can return it if it doesn't work, there's always the quality issues with Chinese manufacturer. You know, a lot of what they build is great, but some of it is a little shoddy. So it's a fine Tiny SA clone or update, if you will. If you don't have a Tiny SA spectrum analyzer and you are interested in what kind of energy is kind of going through your house, it's a kind of nice thing to... It certainly is a good way of figuring out how much Wi-Fi radio waves are bouncing back and forth in your house when your neighbors and your Wi-Fi collide with each other repeatedly and screw up your Wi-Fi access. So I think it's a nice thing to have. You know, not everyone needs it, but, you know, it's at a price point that you don't necessarily have to need it. Wanting it probably suffices.
And to HG. Once you mentioned Tiny SA, there's a Tiny SA Ultra spectrum analyzer, and this one, so we're talking about the previous one, the one that most likely some ham radio operators already acquired, is from 100 kHz to 6 GHz, and it features color display, 290 scan points, providing comprehensive coverage of both low and high frequency ranges. I'm reading. The analyzer allows users to visualize signals on the radio spectrum, and it is designed to be portable, making it suitable for various applications. Additionally, it contains all of the components of conventional heterodyne swept spectrum analyzer. enhancing its functionality, end of quote. So, I have a comment on it, because I didn't send you the video that was titled Tiny SA, Quick Comparison of Clone versus Genuine. So if you have a spectrum analyzer and it's a Tiny SA on it, when you see a shadow Tiny SA and a shadow description on the plastic, then you're dealing with the original one. But when you have a Tiny SA logo that is very bright white and all of the descriptors are very light bright, you're likely using or purchasing the clone. So purchasing from some Chinese places doesn't pay. Whether there would be Alibaba or any other, including Amazon, you may expect that you're not getting the original one, but you're getting the clone. And the video actually makes comparison, and it shows that the filter in the clone is not operational. It is creepy. It shows you something that doesn't exist at all. And even if you spent your $90 or $100 or $200 for the original one, I think it is worth it, because again, it is made in China but wasn't really designed by Chinese. And once you have a nano DNA that is made by the same people, you would rather have spectrum analyzer made by the same company. Okay. There is a spectrum analyzer that costs just a little more, and that one is O1. OWONXSA815TG. It's a spectrum analyzer, 9-inch LCD from 1 kHz resolution, bandwidth 9 kHz to 1.5 GHz, but least is O1. This one costs $756. It used to be $1,200, probably it didn't sell. And it offers you full functioning spectrum analyzer, but at the same time we have a Regal that is a little bit even more expensive, and this one is DSA710. That one is from 1 GHz, 1 GHz spectrum analyzer, and it costs $944.37. The difference is that Regal is a recognized name, Chinese, but recognized. So people made thousands of videos about it, and they made plenty of comparisons. And the company is rather trying to keep the standard, although it's hard to compare to some old American-made equipment from Hewlett-Packard, or even a Japanese Anritsu that was made 20 years ago. So that would be all about spectrum analysis. Any comments? Okay, the next one is Tune A Tena. I've got a good opinion, good helpful opinion from Dr. Roy. It is a very, very interesting antenna, having ability to tune to any frequency of your choice exactly without antenna tuner. So let's say you have 80 meters up to 6 meters, and you want to have exactly the this antenna resonate at the frequency of your choice. And it will. But there is a but. So I would appreciate if Dr. Roy would give some more about it.
Would you care to tell me what frame of reference you want more about it? Because, you know, you're just kind of describing an antenna, and I'm not exactly sure what you want me to tell you about it. I mean, it's a ripoff of Stepper's patent. So, I mean, they're probably, the only thing saving them is they probably haven't sold that many antennas. But it's basically a mechanically tuned radiator. You wind in the length of radiating elements so that it reaches a resonant length, which is how Stepper works. And Stepper has a whole bunch of patents on it.
Yes, so it looks like inverted V. You have a left arm and a right arm. And then you have on the top you have of your mast, you have a box with the stepper motor. What it does is unwind or wind the required length of the wire for two arms, making it resonating at any frequency of your choice. I didn't know that it was a ripoff, but I know that plenty of publication is there, and if they are not authorized to do it soon, that might be not available. So the antenna is interesting. However, the waterfall shows you only the bandwidth of that antenna, which would be very narrow on your transceiver. And you have to wait till the stepper motor actually makes that antenna long enough, left and right arm, to resonate at that frequency. And I assume from the video that it is not something that you can program. It is something that you could do manually. Am I right? And to
explain. Well, a lot of that material is kind of difficult to follow. They're kind of vague all over the place. But, yeah, it seems to be a manual tuning mechanism. It's incredibly expensive for what it is. It's over $1,000, I think. The Step IR, they make a whole bunch. They make motorized ones. They make automated ones. They even make manual ones. So, you know, you can check out Step IR's website for the legitimate version for these things. You know, patents are not that difficult to screw around with. There's a European company that basically stole Stepper's technology, and they just sell it in Europe. As long as they stay out of the United States, Step IR doesn't really seem to want to litigate them in Europe. But nothing special. I assume this guy just kind of saw an article or a magazine, the ad for Step IR, 12 years ago and said, yeah, I'm going to do that.
Yes. I was really puzzled by the information that you gave me. But it looks like the original concept wasn't the concept of the people making the antenna the name Tune-A-Tenna, T-E-N-N-A. The video that is advertising the antenna says Tune-A-Tenna, the best HF ham radio antenna I ever had. And of course, there are plenty of people who like it. I didn't see anything that would be negative about that antenna. I assume that if somebody spent $1,000 on it, they unlikely will be complaining about it unless it is a total trash. Back to you.
Well, yeah, AC2GS, by the way. There's a lot of affirmation bias. Also, there's a lot of fraud in reviews. So, whereas in some cases Amazon has a way of documenting if you bought the product from them, they list that in your review. But things like EHAM don't have anything like that. So, you know, I could go to EHAM and say that this antenna that I've never seen is the greatest antenna since Swiss cheese, and whatever that might mean. Reviews are kind of meaningless. You got to kind of take them with a grain of salt. You got to interpret them, unfortunately. A lot of people love it. I've never heard of it, and I've kind of looked into all kinds of antennas. Especially if it was basically just a clone of Step IR, I would probably have discovered it many years ago if it was at all relatively popular. You know, the fact that they can put together a website, and I could put together reviews, and I could make some product that doesn't even exist sound like it's a real nifty product, and you should buy it because all these people love it, whoever they might be. These nameless or random call signs that I pulled out of QRZ and such. So, you know, I don't know. It takes more to impress me, I think.
Yeah. The most confusing was that the guy who presented that antenna, C-Tentec, he used the logo Tentec. I didn't find that antenna on the Tentec, but as you mentioned, there was that guy purchased Tentec. Could you explain more about it?
I don't think he purchased. I don't think it's as accurate to say he purchased Tentec as he purchased the brand name Tentec. It's like RCA. When RCA went bankrupt, a whole bunch of different organizations, business groups bought up the brand name for different products and for different areas. You know, RCA in Europe is different than RCA in the United States. RCA that builds radios is different than builds air conditioners or something. So it's just a brand name. It's just a brand name that enough people have a good memory about that it's worth a couple of bucks. But that's all it's worth is a couple of bucks. It's not like the people who ran Tentec or the people who worked for Tentec or the equipment is going to be, you know, they're going to take the latest Tentec model radios and upgrade them. These guys are just going to slap Tentec on anything that they try to promote and sell and hope that they can get a couple more people to buy their products. That's all that is. I find it problematic when, you know, just businesses buy up names. And that's all the technology, as far as I'm aware of, that they bought. They didn't buy any kind of patents or any kind of design models or anything. It's just, what's in the name?
So according to your, to the email that you sent me, I went to the site, the Tentec side, and I found that Dishtronics is the new company, and of course at the Ham Campion 2025 there was a Tentec, a humongous letters, and there was a small something that says about these trunks. It looks like those are the guys who made it. But at the same time, I sent you another email that it says Temtex Trench VNA with all function transceiver power meter. So imagine that you have a VNA, and then you have a spectrum analyzer in it, and then you have a power meter in it. And although I've got an explanation from Dr. Roy, I would appreciate if he can voice it and to exam.
Okay, you sent me a video of these guys who have the famous company Dishtronics, again, who I've never heard of, promoting some product, and it's 2 years later because the video was I think 2022 or something, and it's not on their website. There's no sign of it, and again, it is relatively easy to make a mock-up of a box that has a display. It's relatively simple to program a couple of moving pieces on the display and say, aha, this is what it's going to do, when in fact it's just playing an MPEG. So do I know for a fact that that was actually a VNA and a watt meter and all the other things versus just a box with an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi and an LCD screen with a mock-up? No. And probably it was a mock-up. I've seen more than a few amazing products announced at these places, and they say they expect to start manufacturing it in 2 to 3 years. That's sort of the way that they kind of tell you that it's all BS. And there was this great radio. It was going to be the radio that ruled them all digitally. It was going to have a Fusion and DMR and D-Star all in one. It was going to be able to download code plugs. It sounded great. They took it to all the shows. They showed it apparently operating, but not really transmitting and receiving, but, you know, the screen did great things. And it got nowhere. People put down deposits, and it just faded away. So, again, just because you have something that's vaguely a demo doesn't necessarily mean you have a product. And if it's going to take you years from whatever it is you're showing people to get it into manufacturing, then there's something strange going on, in my particular opinion. If you got a working model, unless there's some kind of supply problem, you should be able to manufacture it within 6 months to a year. The problem is getting it to work. And, you know, if it seems like it works, but it's going to take a couple of years, then it wasn't working, in my opinion. So, again, I don't know these guys. I don't particularly want to know these guys. I don't know what's going on with this story. But like I always say, you need a well-calibrated BS meter, and these guys are pinning mine.
Okay. So when I was sending you the email with the samples I'm going to discuss tonight, I said that a question is if such a device exists. But if we say that we have a VNA, and then we want to have VNA and spectrum analyzer, then if we talking about spectrum analyzer, the spectrum analyzer, some of the spectrum analyzers, they have ability to measure the power. And of course, the maximum power that you can deliver to it is milliwatts, so you guys have to use the attenuator for it. But as long as you know how much attenuation you have in dBs, or if some traditional guys want to have in microvolts or millivolts, then you can calculate that the program, the algorithm that is inside of it could actually calculate how much power do you really have there. So the question question is it possible that the VNA could exist with the spectrum analyzer in one box? And to clear.
Is it possible? Yes. Is it probable? No. Is it cost effective to do that? Probably not. So, you know, I mean, if you want to believe, feel free to believe. Like I said before, these guys are pinning my BS meter. They don't strike me as engineers. I don't believe that they, you know, announced their product 2 years ago and there's no sign of it yet. You know, what are they waiting for? So, you know, I think it's just, the Three Stooges trying to promote someone else's invention, you know. But, yeah, I mean, at least I don't own any stock in Step IR, so they're not taking any money from me. But still, it's a little bit curious that they seem to have a product that works exactly like a patented one. Those go for a good penny too, although the least expensive are the manual ones. They all go, I think they go in range from about $1,000 for a manually tuning vertical to a multi-array Yagi, a multi-band Yagi, that can be stacked and phased and such. So you could drop $20,000 on Step IR antenna equipment.
So Enrico MS2034B, this is a Japanese company, and they have handheld vector network analyzed with spectrum analyzer combined into a single measurement solution for harsh RF and physical environment on field test. And of course, it is a beautiful equipment. The only problem is that Beavers cost about $20,000, and if you have the older one, which is the A version, which is MS2034A, this one also has VNA and a spectrum analyzer, but the spectrum analyzer works only from 2 megahertz to 4 gigahertz. I'm sorry, VNA works from 2 megahertz to 4 gigahertz, and spectrum analyzer from 9 kilohertz to 4 gigahertz. So for those who want to use the VNA for the lower frequency than the 2 megahertz, they can do it. And this one is offered on eBay for $9,000 if somebody wants to buy it, and it is a used one.
Comment?
Yeah, please.
I'm not sure if this is exactly the thing that Wesley is referring to. What there are spectrum analyzers with a tracking generator. I know we have an older piece of equipment at the school. It's an Anritsu unit from quite a few years ago, back in the late 80s, which is basically it's a vector network analyzer. But it's advertised as a spectrum analyzer with tracking generator. The tracking generator essentially makes the spectrum analyzer into a vector network analyzer because as it sweeps, this tracking generator sweeps along with the frequency that the spectrum analyzer is analyzing. So that's your signal source if you want to analyze, you know, the response of a piece of equipment. Not sure if that's what Wesley means. Go ahead.
Yeah, but what's the list price for that new?
Oh, well, this is going back. I don't have prices, but this is going back a number of years ago. This was around 86 when we first got the Upper Division program going. So it's going back a number of years. At that time, we paid, that was a pretty good hunk of change. But I'm sure it's probably a lot less now. But I'm just saying that putting the two in the same box is not a big deal, because they often will just take the spectrum analyzer and then add to it a tracking generator, which is a signal source that will track along as the spectrum analyzer sweeps. So together in the same box, that makes your network analyzer.
Okay, but usually I've found, you know, those are items that people using calibration equipment have. I don't recall any amateur radio-related company that ever sold a signal generator, spectrum analyzer with tracking. I could be wrong, but the problem that I have is it's an unnecessarily more expensive piece of equipment. You know, if you have a cheap spectrum analyzer and you have a cheap vector network analyzer, you know, you could just kind of rope them together and call them the same thing and save yourself a significant amount of change.
Well, yeah, actually, yes. This is one of the things that Dick used to talk about in the days before the vector network analyzers. People would have to get out a sweep generator, a detector, an oscilloscope that was in the XY mode, and gang all these things together to essentially make a network analyzer. But now that comes in one box, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, technology is great. It shrinks everything. It shrinks the price of most things and makes it much easier to handle. But, again, you know, you didn't have the opportunity to see the video. I have seen more than a few of these demonstrations on the floor where they don't really do much except, you know, tell you to look at the screen, because the screen is doing some things. And I know how relatively easy it is to just kind of dummy up a MPG file and just have something with a Raspberry Pi stuck in the corner that's just outputting a movie, and people think that they're controlling a prototype.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of as I said, a lot of Bravo Sierra on it up there, so have to be careful. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, modern technology unfortunately picked up this really terrible motto: "Fake it until you make it," and there are guys doing it all over the damn place. It's rather annoying to watch people kind of pull that. I mean, Theranos was probably the obvious example of people who, for the most part, knew better that they were selling a product that didn't exist and probably couldn't, and yet, and they had credentials and esteem, and yet they took the money and ran. Well, in the case of Elizabeth Holmes, she didn't run that far.
Yeah, that is true. It's funny. Something just sprung to mind. I remember, I think Carl Sagan, the late Carl Sagan, has a book out about baloney detectors. So might be a required reading for all of the tech debt. Hi.
Yeah, especially the Internet. I mean, I've often said it, I'll repeat it again, you know, a hammer is a great tool, but you could use it to build a house, or you could use it to bash your neighbor's skull in. So it's just a tool to be used or to be misused. And the Internet is capable of such incredible misuse that hopefully people will start to teach their children critical thinking so that they have a better BS meter. Because there's a lot of BS on the Internet, and the Internet is kind of becoming the world to a lot of people. So, you know, let us all beware. Don't take things at face value. Always think about things. Does it make sense? You know, or doesn't it? So that's my two cents of philosophy for tonight.
Sounds good. Danger, warning, political comments ahead, so I'm going to return to listening.
Yeah, I don't think we directly hit politics. Culture in general, you know, make it until you fake it until you make it is an awful philosophy. Civilizations probably have been destroyed with similar.